we can't support the bill as he's introduced it, mostly because the bill weakens protections for fish.
Flexibility in the Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization worries a commercial fishing group. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Army National Guard members reconnect with rural Alaska during Arctic training.
We have a short window that we have to try to reach out and make sure that the Guard doesn't disappear from rural Alaska.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, human resources, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast.
The Big Thorn timber sale lawsuit has been dismissed by a federal judge in Anchorage. Alaska U.S. District Court Judge Ralph Beislein granted summary judgment today in favor of the defendants and quite decidedly rejected every argument brought forward by the plaintiffs. The lawsuit isn't necessarily over, however. The plaintiffs could appeal the decision to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and seek an injunction pending the outcome. The lawsuit was filed last summer, shortly after the U.S. Forest Service made a final decision to move forward with the timber sale on Prince of Wales Island. The proposed timber harvest would include about 6,000 acres of old-growth rainforest. Environmental organizations say that acreage is critical habitat for deer and wolf populations. The Forest Service is moving away from old-growth logging, but the switch to second growth will take time. Federal officials and pro-logging groups say old-growth harvests will need to continue during that transition for mills to survive. In his decision today, Beislein ruled that the plaintiffs failed to show that the Forest Service didn't follow proper procedure before making its final decision. Alaska Congressman Don Young has introduced a bill to reauthorize the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the nation's primary law governing fishing in federal waters. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, it leaves fisheries managers some controversial wiggle room.
Previous versions of the law established 8 regional councils and required them to set harvest limits based on science to end overfishing. The mechanism is known as the Alaska Model of Fisheries Management. Young's bill, though, introduces some flexibility for fisheries managers. Among other changes, it would allow councils to consider a community's economic need when setting an annual catch limit, and it would allow a more elastic timeline for rebuilding depleted stocks. Young's spokesman, Matt Shuckrow, says the flexibility is intended for regions elsewhere in the country that don't have enough scientific data.
We don't anticipate that changes will be made for the North Pacific Council. The North Pacific Council is still considered to be the premier model of fisheries management, and it has generally worked very well.
Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida is among those pressing for greater flexibility, saying it's in his state's interest. The bill would also require Alaska's governor to consult subsistence stakeholders before nominating people to the council. And it says subsistence expertise can qualify a person as a nominee. But it does not add a subsistence seat to the North Pacific Council, as some Alaska tribes requested. Shuckrow says Young hasn't ruled out the idea, but if Alaska adds a subsistence seat, Washington State will want to add to its delegation on the council, too.
That's something, like I said, we are weighing heavily. And also, this is a starting point. The bill is not set in stone.
Linda Benkin, executive director of Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, says she's troubled by the flexibility provisions.
We can't support the bill as he's introduced it, mostly because the bill weakens protections for fish. And we think at this point it's incredibly important to hold on to the progress that's been made from the past reauthorization to end overfishing.
Behnken says Alaska's commitment to science-based fisheries management is strong, so she doesn't see the North Pacific Council changing its approach. But her group has been working in coalition with small boat commercial fishermen from New England and the Southeast, and they don't see flexibility as a benefit to their fishing communities. Besides, Behnken says, overfishing in waters off the lower 48 can hurt Alaska, too.
Anything that happens in this country that undermines that success, yeah, I think it hurts all the fisheries of this country, hurts the marketability of our fish in the global market that increasingly cares about sustainably harvesting resources.
Congressman Young is in charge of the House version of the fisheries bill, which will be marked up in the House Natural Resources Committee. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
More than 100 soldiers will train in the Bethel area over the next week and a half to build Arctic operational expertise and cultivate the next generation of National Guard soldiers. Members of the Alaska Army National Guard's 297th Battlefield Surveillance Brigade are descending on the YK Delta to polish their Arctic skills. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
Sergeant Major Richard Hildreth is command sergeant for the group. He's familiar with cold weather operations in rural Alaska after growing up and serving in Bethel, but he says the Army as a whole has let their Arctic abilities slip.
Surprisingly, the Army has moved away from a foothold in the Arctic, and we're trying to get that foothold back, so it's important for us to come out and learn our lessons about what equipment works properly in the environment. Knowing that the Arctic is a vast environment, it's got multiple terrains and multiple conditions.
Teams will conduct exercises using snow machines and snowcats. They'll test mobile operations on the area's rivers and tundra, while cold weather experts train soldiers in snowshoeing, skiing, and Arctic survival. Hildreth says this year's warm spell is a chance to work in overflow and wet conditions. Massive C-17 cargo planes are delivering loads of vehicles, equipment, and critically, people. Major Aaron Kelsey is operations officer for the 297th.
With everybody being so focused on the wars the last, 10, 15 years, we kind of lost touch with the communities, which is, a big part of why the Guard exists, is to, support the communities. And this is kind of, our way of kind of trying to come back and start making that link again with the communities.
Rural participation in the Guard has dwindled over the past couple decades. Hildreth doesn't want it to shrink further and put the rural armories and stations at risk. But he says for the Guard to be revitalized, they must be able to recruit more young men and women to serve locally and justify the Guard's presence.
We have a short window that we have to try to reach out and make sure that the Guard doesn't disappear from rural Alaska. So we're trying very hard to make sure that we come out, we show the community, the people, the population, that we do care, we do wish for the Guard to desire to succeed and grow. But that takes us coming out showing that we're not just an Anchorage-based organization. We want to come out, spend the resources, spend the time.
The Guard has hired its first full-time recruiter in a number of years who's based in Bethel. The Guard is planning several community events, including a Yupik dance performance for soldiers, an open house at the new armory March 27th, and visits to nearby villages upriver of Bethel and on the coast. Over 30 parachuters will jump out of planes near Tundra Ridge next Friday. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
A new Alaska Army National Guard commander is taking the helm in a weekend ceremony at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Colonel Joseph Streff will take over from Brigadier General Mike Bridges at a ceremony beginning at 2 p.m. on Sunday. Streff has been with the Guard for more than 27 years. Streff is the first new commander under the administration of Alaska Governor Bill Walker. The Guard is emerging from an investigation of alleged sexual misconduct among its ranks. The issue played a high-profile role in the 2014 gubernatorial race, which was underway during the release of a scathing federal report of sexual misconduct and fraud within the Guard. Army investigators have confirmed they've launched a formal investigation into a Stryker Brigade soldier's allegations of racist behavior by some members of his unit. The action follows an earlier informal inquiry into allegations, first outlined in a story published Wednesday by the Army Times. The story is based on statements by a staff sergeant with 2nd Platoon, C Company, 3rd Battalion, 21st Infantry Regiment, a unit under the 25th Infantry Division's 1st Stryker Brigade Combat Team at Fort Wainwright. The staff sergeant has served for a decade and asked not to be identified. He told the Army Times that soldiers with the platoon created a weekly opportunity to racially slur fellow soldiers, known as Racial Thursdays. U.S. Army Alaska spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Alan Brown this morning confirmed that officials with the command had completed an initial informal inquiry into the allegations and have now launched a formal investigation. 1st Stryker Brigade Combat Team Commander Colonel Don Hill appointed an investigating officer yesterday to look into the matter. Brown says he can't estimate how long it'll take to complete the investigation. He emphasized that the allegations are just that, allegations, until evidence is found to support them. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new British Columbia mining requirements don't satisfy Southeast conservation advocates.
The main thing about the Mount Polley investigation report was that mines had to put safety over profit.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Rural Energy Enterprises, supplying dealers throughout Alaska with fuel-efficient Toyo stoves and Oil Miser water heaters for more than 28 years. Local dealers can be found at rural-energy.com.
At least 20 distinct native languages are spoken in Alaska, and every year the population of speakers gets a little smaller. A Golovin senator now wants to reverse that trend by encouraging immersion language charter schools in the state. Democrat Donnie Olson introduced a bill today that would create a special certification process for instructors of native languages so that it would be easier for them to teach in schools. He's hoping to build on the success of legislation recognizing Alaska's native languages as official languages in their own right.
There is, a continued interest, a continued momentum of issues like this that are coming to the forefront.
While the bill would make it easier to set up immersion programs for any language, it makes specific reference to revitalizing endangered languages and providing an education consistent with Indigenous cultures. The idea behind an immersion program is that students would be able to take all kinds of courses, like math and science, in a language other than English to help their fluency. The charter schools could be set up using already existing resources, serving as alternative curricula in brick-and-mortar schools that are already up and running. Olson hopes that such schools could be established in rural areas like the one he represents. His own parents spoke Inupiaq to him when he was a child, and he would like his children to have a chance to learn the language as well.
The idea that they could do something like that, I think would be make the daddy proud.
Bethel already operates a Yupik immersion school. Two foreign language programs exist in South Central, a German program in Anchorage and a Spanish program in Wasilla. Southeast Alaska's largest tribal organization is getting $500,000 from the federal government to make energy efficiency upgrades to its Juneau headquarters. The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska hopes to reduce energy use by 30% and save about $15,000 a year with the improvements to the Andrew Hope Building. The tribe will match the federal government's $500,000 investment in the project, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. The agency this week announced $6 million will go to 11 organizations nationwide through its tribal energy program. Tribal officials could not be reached for comment. The British Columbia Environmental Assessment Office announced yesterday it's adding new requirements for proposed mines undergoing environmental review. The changes are part of an effort to make mine tailings facilities safer in response to last year's tailings dam collapse at the Mount Polley mine. KSTK's Katarina Sestarek reports.
The British Columbia Environmental Assessment Office is adding information requirements for mines undergoing environmental review to ensure the safety of new tailings facilities. The changes were spurred by last year's tailings dam collapse at the Mount Polley mine, which spilled millions of gallons of mine waste into creeks and lakes. BC Environment Minister Mary Polak says this is the next step in following recommendations made by an independent review of the Mount Polley disaster.
These mines would have ordinarily proceeded with requirements that were in place prior to the geotechnical reports coming out. Those requirements would not have been sufficient to address the recommendations. So by adding these information requirements, we will that way incorporate the recommendations from the geotechnical report into these existing applications.
The report found the collapse was caused by too much weight being put on a layer of glacial sand under the dam's foundation. Mines that are proposing to build tailings facilities will have to consider the potential risks of their preferred design and have a feasible plan to address those risks. They'll be required to assess possible environmental, health, social, and economic impacts of a dam breach. The environmental assessment will also require mine companies to provide information on multiple alternative options for tailings management to ensure the mine is choosing the safest option. That will include a comparison of best practices and technologies for tailings management. Guy Archibald is Mining and Clean Water Program Manager at the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council.
I think there's a vast difference between the recommendations of the Mount Pauley investigation and what the Environmental Assessment Office is proposing here. They're basically just looking for more information on tailings dam alternatives.
Archibald says the safer option of dry stack tailings management was rejected at the KSM mine when it was undergoing environmental assessment. He says BC's new requirements do nothing to quell his concerns about future tailings dams near Alaska.
The main thing about the Mount Pauley investigation report was that mines had to put safety over profit. And I just don't see that level of concern here from BC Environmental Assessment Office.
The new information requirements only apply to proposed mines that are going through the environmental assessment process. Shaft Creek, a proposed mine in the Stikeen River watershed, will have to comply with the new requirements. The Red Chris and KSM mines, both upriver from southeast Alaska, aren't affected because they already passed through the environmental assessment process. The Red Chris mine, which is run by Mount Pauley owner Imperial Metals, isn't fully operating yet, but it's using an interim permit to start filling its tailings dam and producing copper. Existing tailings dams are being investigated by the BC Ministry of Energy and Mines. Environment Minister Polak says this is an interim measure while the Mines Ministry reviews provincial mining regulations. She says the full response to the Mount Pauley mine incident will take a long time.
You will see step after step as we gather more information and as more recommendations become clear. This certainly isn't the end of the response. It's just one more step.
Meanwhile, the Mining Association of Canada, an industry group, is reviewing its tailings management program. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Katarina Sestarik.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries has decided to take no action on a proposal that would have set limits on clams on a remote beach on the west side of Cook Inlet. The request for the limits came from an Inilchik resident. The Peninsula Clarion reports the lack of action leaves the Polly Creek Beach with an unlimited source of razor clams. A crash in razor clam population on the east side of Cook Inlet prompted officials with the State Department of Fish and Game to restrict and ultimately shut down 50 miles of beaches in the Kenai Peninsula.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The men and women of Public Employees Local 71 keep the Hall Road and thousands more miles of Alaska highways clear of snow and sleet in winter and safe for travel in the summer. 2,500 members strong with 74 workstations across Alaska. Public Employees Local 71, working hard for Alaska, working hard for you. This message is sponsored by Public Employees Local 71. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, human resources, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue, Dillingham, Sitka, Chugiak, Fairbanks, Fort Yukon, Wrangell, Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Scott Burton. This week on AK, Athabascan Hip Hop. Samuel Johns grew up in the community of Copper Center, surrounded by drugs and alcohol. After years of struggling with alcoholism, he is now sober and trying to make it as a musician who blends Athabascan culture with hip-hop music. Johns is traveling to villages across the state to perform and talk about living a drug-free life. And as KDLG's Matt Martin reports, it's a message that seems to be resonating with kids in Dillingham.
Students in Dillingham are squeezed into the plastic bleachers in the high school gym on a recent Thursday afternoon as Samuel Johns plays his skin drum. He warns students that he can get pretty loud singing traditional songs, but it's all just part of the show.
When I perform for some of the kids, man, they look scared, especially some of the white kids. I'll just be like, hey! They're just like, is he going like on a war path right now? What is he doing?
Johns is trying to inspire kids to preserve traditional culture, but also close to his heart is a mission to convince rural kids to avoid addiction and curb domestic violence. John spent years drinking growing up in Copper Center. He says he regrets the time he lost just partying away his days. He never graduated from high school.
That's what I'm trying to talk to the kids about, is like not wasting that time and just get on going right now.
He speaks to students about his personal experience with substance abuse and drug dealing.
I'm ashamed of, you know, selling weed because I could have lost my daughter. I could have lost my home. Luckily, that never happened with me. And I feel like now I have the platform to tell my story, to tell people, hey, this is what I went through. Rinse past due when you know you're late. Feel like
giving up, but I know you ain't, because I've been there. Life's a mess. The kids are intrigued by the traditional singing, but as soon as Johns begins to rap, they get out their phones to record and take photos.
That's the first time I ever heard of a rapping native.
Sophomore Dorothy Bavila.
It's very surprising and very cool, and I thought he really got the message out there.
John's message also resonated with 8th grader Kate Gomez.
Him rapping about culture and domestic violence and just standing up for things really inspires me to help other people.
John's frequently raps about his native heritage. He sees himself as a link between where the kids are today and where the elders used to be.
When I talk about traditional music, I try to tell them, you know, like, this right here, our cultural traditional values, it's survived for thousands of years for a reason, not for it to end right now, you know. And right now, I feel like I'm in that position where I can actually build that bridge to have the kids see that our culture is cool. Our culture, you know, like when I did the song One Tribe.
It's dedicated to all my elders, the ones that paved the way for us. My life, this is my pride, this is my story, I will no longer hide. We are all people that live and die, we are all equal, we are one tribe.
Johns sees the problem of addiction as a threat to native culture. He says his ancestors used to be like Superman. They were strong and pure.
But alcohol, drugs, food, you know, unhealthy food, it's crippling our way of life, it's crippling what our ancestors passed down for so many years. Alcoholism, drug addiction, any type of addiction is really our kryptonite, you know, for the way we used to be.
Johns hopes his music, in at least some small way, will help change that. Johns doesn't want kids to simply become fans of his music. He hopes to inspire them to become leaders in their own communities. Johns believes his music allows him to connect with Alaska students in a meaningful way.
All right, I see the kid with the hides on. Who else has hides on here? Just you? All right, man. It's Eno's style.
In Dillingham, I'm Matt Martin.
Open AK, we got hides on our backs. Repping our people in, that's a known fact. Open AK, we got hides on our backs. Repping our people in, that's a known fact.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we'll hear from a high school student from Craig.
Hi, I'm Grace Bowling, and I'm from Craig, Alaska, which is from the Southeast Panhandle. The type of Alaska that I grew up around is around boats and hunting, and I like being out on the water a lot more than I like being on land, and I like being in the air too. think we can thank Alaska for how much I have come to love travel and this pivot trips, especially around when it comes to ferries and airplanes. Although I'm sure a lot of fishermen would hate me for saying this, but I love seeing sea otters out there because they look fuzzy and free, but they're actually really ferocious and they're very good hunters and they can use their body for a lot of different ways, as a table and as a little flotation, and they're so fluent and agile in the water. I have lived here all my life. I don't exactly remember the first time I went on a boat, but I think I was really young when, I think I've been going on ever since, before I was able to talk. We only go out on the boat in the summer or springtime, but it's always fun to do that. My dad likes to hunt, and we hardly get any snow in Craig, so it's not quite as fun, but it's still nice. And it rains and it gets really cold, but it's still not. I mean, you can find other stuff to do, whether it's related to the outdoors or not. The top college of my choice is Southern Oregon University in Ashland, Oregon, and I am planning on going there on the end of September, so I am very excited to go, but I'm always going to consider coming back because my family's from here, and it's a pretty incredible, Alaska's a really incredible state.
Grace Bowling is from Craig, Alaska. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every person in Alaska on the radio. If you want to tell your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Matt Martin, Ann Hillman, Annie Fite, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Scott Burton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Casey Kelly in Juneau, and Katerina Sestarik in Wrangell. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Pat Yak is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly. The American Lung Association of Alaska invites you to join their premier annual cycling event, the Clean Air Challenge, on May 9th. This family-friendly one-day event begins in Talkeetna and offers routes ranging from 10 to 100 miles. This fundraiser benefits the American Lung Association to support lung health programs across Alaska. For more information, visit cleanairchallengeak.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.